We are super excited because today's episode is sponsored by BarkBox.
As most of you guys know, my dog Mackie loves his chew toys, but they do not last very long in our house. And that's why we love our subscription service, BarkBox.
BarkBox is a monthly subscription box that offers an array of themed boxes for your pup. Inside your box, you'll find toys, treats, and unleash joy, thoughtfully designed to satisfy every dog's unique playstyle.
BarkBox has several boxes to choose from, depending on your dog's needs, such as the Super Chewer box, which was designed to challenge and engage your pup for longer-lasting play. And that's what we need for Mackie.
Right now, you can get a free extra month of BarkBox, which is up to a $35 value, by using our link www.barkbox.com/inhumanpod.
So treat your dog to what they love with BarkBox. www.barkbox.com/inhumanpod for a extra free month of BarkBox. What's up, you guys? I'm Haley.
And I'm Andrea.
And this is Inhuman, a true crime podcast. Alrighty, so I think we're just going to dive right in today because I know a lot of people have been waiting for this episode and I have been waiting to share it, so.
Let's do it. Sounds like a plan.
I did, really quickly before we get into the episode, I wanted to mention that I have, since I posted the last episode and the last post for the episode on our Instagram, I've learned that the photo, the ransom photo that was released, that people share, that I talked about, that shows Samantha Koenig holding up a newspaper. Some reports say that that is a recreation of the photo. I've had a couple people tell me that on Instagram, and I've read a couple of reports that say that. So either way, it's either the photo or it's a recreation of what was depicted in that photo. Like, it's... Even
if, why would someone recreate that?
Yeah, apparently there were a couple of things that recreated it, or somebody that recreated it for some reason, and it still depicts exactly what the photo was, but I'm not 100% sure. I've seen reports that say that's the actual photo, and then I've seen reports that say it's a recreation, so I don't know, okay. But I did want to mention it just because I don't want to, like, ever give you guys the wrong information.
Right.
Even Crime Junkie, when they shared their episode on this case, they said, like, that's the photo. So,
okay.
I don't know, maybe it's come out more recent years, but I just wanted to mention it because, you know, again, I don't want to ever give you guys, like, false information. So, it may or may not be the actual photo, but either way, even if it's not the real photo, it's basically, like, a perfect recreation of the photo. I've heard in some places that her hair was actually braided, I'm not 100% sure on that. So I just wanted to mention that before we got into part two.
Okay.
So this is part two of Israel Keys. If you haven't listened to part one, go listen to that because we talked about the murder that he committed that got him caught, and you're just going to be confused. So if you haven't listened to part one, go listen to it. And where we left off in part one, Keys had just been arrested after he was pulled over in Texas and found with Samantha Koenig's phone and debit card. So he was arrested on fraud charges and he was extradited back to Alaska. And once there, he confessed to Samantha Koenig's murder. While he was incarcerated, he spoke to investigators multiple times. I've seen somewhere that said it was like 40 hours of interviews that he did. Yeah. Yeah. And they have released a couple. I found about 4 hours worth when I was briefly looking. And I'll talk a little bit about some of it. But if you guys want to go watch that or listen to it, it's on the FBI's YouTube page. So you can just search, like, FBI Israel Keys interview and it'll come up. And I found, like, 4 different ones. So if anybody is interested in that, you can go watch that. It gives me the heebie-jeebies, so.
I was going to say, it sounds like maybe I'm going to pass on that.
Yeah, it, like, I mean, obviously all of this that we talk about is real and actual things that happen, yeah. But just, like, seeing an actual serial killer talking about, and he doesn't even talk, I didn't watch all of it, I watched a bunch of it, and he wasn't talking, like, a ton about the crimes, but just seeing him, like, talk, and he was, like, laughing, and it was just,
like, very nonchalant, yeah, right?
Just fucking yeah. sick. Like, we talk about, and I listen to true crime all the time, and I'm always listening about serial killers, and we talk about them all the time, but to, like, actually see him, I don't know, it was I'm glad I watched it. Yeah, it was chilling.
Yeah.
But it was also, like, a good reminder that this shit is all real. I mean, obviously we know that, yeah. But, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, during these interviews, he told investigators that he would tell them everything, saying, quote, "I'll tell you everything you want to know. I'll give it blow by blow if you want. I have lots more stories to tell."
Ew.
I know.
He sounds like... I don't want to say a narcissist because that's not the vibe that I'm getting, but he sounds very, like, braggy and, like,
yeah.
proud of what he has done.
I think he was. I think he was proud that he didn't get caught until he did. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
And I think he, like, genuinely enjoyed every little bit
that he did. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So he said he'd tell them everything, but he said he'd only do so on one condition, and that was that they kept everything out of the press. And he said he wanted that because he didn't want his daughter to read about what he had done. So remember, he had a pretty young daughter. I'm not sure of her exact age, which, like, okay, good
That's
on
noble,
you.
Yeah, I guess,
you don't want your daughter to have to face all the shit you did, but at the same time,
don't do the stuff that you did.
Exactly.
God.
Another thing that investigators discovered during their time talking with Israel Keyes was that he admired Ted Bundy. And there actually are some similarities between them, including that they were both heavy drinkers, they were both methodical, intelligent killers, they felt possession over their victims. But there were several differences. Ted Bundy's murders were, like, spread throughout the country because he lived in many places. It wasn't, like, an intentional act to not get caught, as it was with Israel Keyes. Bundy also targeted specifically young women, whereas Israel Keyes, his victim profile was completely random. So he kind of, like, said he admired Ted Bundy and he was similar to Ted Bundy, but then investigators were like, eh, you're really not. Like, get over yourself.
Yeah. Bundy had a type big time.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Other than you two being horrific serial killers,
I don't know.
That's
about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Keyes also reportedly told investigators that Dennis Rader, who, if you don't know who he is, he's another serial killer, and he's better known as BTK.
BTK, yep.
So Keyes told investigators that he thought that Dennis Rader was a wimp for apologizing for his crimes.
Wow.
Right?
Like, I mean,
what the fuck?
That's what I'm saying. He seems very proud of himself for
yeah.
all the horrible, horrific things that he did.
He definitely was. Disgusting. So, Keyes claimed that the first murders that he committed were in the 1990s in Washington State. But he said his first planned attack actually happened back in Oregon in either 1997 or 98. He said, and trigger warning, we will be discussing... throughout this episode, we will be discussing, you know, the murders and assault and things like that. So just a trigger warning, a general trigger warning for this whole episode.
Okay.
He said that during that first planned attack, he abducted and raped a teenage girl and he had intended to murder her, but she convinced him to let her leave.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
She's very lucky. If that's true, she's very lucky.
I know. He said, quote, "I wasn't violent enough, but I made up my mind I was never going to let that happen again." AKA, like, never gonna let someone get away again.
Right.
He said that he murdered at least one person in 1998 and then paused for 3 years while he was in the army. And through all of the different discussions that he had with investigators, he confessed to killing at least 7 people all around the country. But his believed victim count is 11 people.
Okay.
But despite the crimes he confessed to, you know, all the 7 that he claimed he killed, only 2 other victims' names were ever revealed: Bill and Lorraine Currier. So Bill and Lorraine were a married couple living in Essex, Vermont, and they were known as being homebodies that enjoyed living with their pets in their ranch-style home. According to the U.S. attorney, they were, quote, friendly, peaceful, good people who encountered a force of pure evil acting at random. Now, before I get into the details of their case, I want to talk about Keyes' MO, which I recently learned stands for modus operandi, which I probably said that wrong, like very, no accent, but that's what it stands
very
for.
Very American. Yeah. Yeah. Yes. And it's probably Latin, I'm sure.
Yeah, it is Latin. It's a, like, mode of operation, I think it stands for.
Right.
So, Keyes' MO, or, like, lack of MO, is why he is known as one of the, like, scariest serial killers. And we kind of mentioned this in part one, but he really had no MO. Everything he did was random. It was very methodical, but it was random.
He just liked to kill, I think. I really do think that.
He did.
And he didn't care who, child, man, woman, old, exactly. Young, whatever.
He had no victim profile. He killed people all across the United States. And some people do believe he could possibly have victims in Mexico or other countries as well, because we know he did travel to other countries.
And his name comes up a lot in other cases. Oh, like, it's kind of creepy.
Yeah. He would take extreme action to avoid detection, and that's one of the reasons his crimes were so random. And it obviously worked, because investigators would have never linked him, at least it would have taken a lot to link him to the other murders until he confessed. Like, he has said, he told investigators in those interviews that some of the people that he killed, their stories weren't even big. Like, they were just missing people, and their stories weren't getting national attention at all.
Wow.
He explained that he would never kill in the same area twice, and he had no connection to any of the victims.
Okay.
And as random as the actual acts were, he did do a lot of planning. According to the FBI, Keyes described to investigators several remote locations that he would frequent to locate, like, to look for victims. So this was like parks, campgrounds, trailheads, cemeteries, boating areas. So he would go to those places in different states, different areas of different states, to look for his victims. So it was random, but once he chose a place, he would go and stake that out.
Right.
When he was on the road, he would also pay in only cash, and he would remove the battery from his cell phone to avoid being tracked.
Wow.
Yeah. It's believed that he funded all of his travel with money from bank robberies. And then one of the most infamous things about Israel Keyes was his murder kits.
I was going to say, when are we going to talk about the kill kits?
Yep. He had traveled across the U.S. planting these murder kits, kill kits, whatever you want to call them. And these basically contained different things, usually guns, ammunition, and chemicals to later destroy bodies. And there's actually one photo of one of these that was recovered in New York, and I'll share that on our Instagram. But basically, it was like an orange watertight bucket. And whenever I see these, I think of like the Home Depot buckets.
Yeah.
Like, that's all I like can think of.
Like the paint buckets or like cement buckets or whatever. I don't know what's in those things, but
yeah. And the one that was recovered had a .22 caliber gun, empty magazines, ammunition, and a silencer. So 2 of these have been found by the FBI after Keyes was arrested, that one in New York and another one in Alaska. And it's actually unknown how many of these remain around the country. Keyes did admit to burying some in at least Washington, Wyoming, Texas, and likely Arizona that have just never been found.
That's very methodical.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's super scary. And I've heard, I don't know if it was in other cases or another podcast or what, but I heard, like, people have found, like, supposedly have found them in, like, other countries, too.
Oh, wow. I hadn't heard that, but that wouldn't surprise
me. Yeah.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me at all.
Yeah.
So, Keyes would bury these in random places, and then when he wanted to commit a murder, he would dig up one of his kits.
Wow.
To keep things untraceable, Keyes would often fly into an airport and then rent a car and drive hundreds of miles to his destination. And that's exactly what he did with the couriers. In June 2011, he left Alaska to fly to Chicago, where he then rented a car and drove to Vermont. So he said that he had left Alaska with the intent of kidnapping and murdering someone. So, like, he went on this trip as, like, I'm going to go commit a murder.
Just for that? Wow.
He spent 3 days in Vermont looking for his victim and fishing. Like, I guess he was, like, rented a boat and was, like,
an avid fisher.
Yeah. And it's believed that when he was looking for his victim in Vermont, he was looking specifically for a house that had an attached garage, no car in the driveway, no children, and no dog. Hmm. So in the area, he recovered one of his murder kits that he had planted 2 years prior, and this kit reportedly contained zip ties, a handgun, silencers, ligatures, ammunition, Drano, duct tape, and garbage bags. On June 8th, 2011, Keyes left his hotel and approached the courier's home on foot. He was wearing a headlamp, and he went and cut their phone line and then entered the home in what he described as a blitz attack.
Sometimes when I don't feel like reading or watching TV, I just want to sit back and play a fun game on my phone. And I recently started playing June's Journey, and when I tell you I'm loving it, that is an understatement. I'm already on the fourth chapter and I've only been playing for a few days. June's Journey is a hidden object mystery game, and I love it because it brings out my inner detective. You play as June Parker in the 1920s trying to solve her sister's murder. It's so much fun to travel the world of the 20s looking for clues that are indicating that June's family has some dark secrets. You also get to create and decorate your own estate island, which I loved because it made me feel really fancy and important. In my last chapter, I discovered a big family secret and there was an unexpected death, but I won't ruin it for you. You can discover your inner detective and play yourself by downloading June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android. You can find the link to download June's Journey for free in the show notes of this episode.
He entered through the attached garage, attacked them, and tied them up. According to him, he asked them about what they had in their home, like if they had a safe or guns, and he then took their gun and cell phones and then put them in their own car and drove them out to an abandoned farmhouse that he had scouted out before. He said he then took Bill inside to the basement, leaving Lorraine in the car. And Lorraine was actually able to escape while she was left in the car, and she began running out to the main road. But Keyes was able to catch up with her and tackled her down to the ground, brought her inside, and tied her up in the bedroom.
Oh my gosh, that's so terrifying.
I know. When he went back down to the basement, he discovered that Bill had partially, like, worked himself free. And when Keyes was recalling this to investigators, he claimed, quote, "That pissed me off because there's a very specific way I want things done and I have the whole thing planned out. I have everything I need to do it," end quote. So when Bill, like, ruined his plans, Keyes said he lost control and struck him several times with a shovel before shooting him to death.
Oh my gosh.
He claims that he then sexually assaulted Lorraine and then brought her down to the basement to see her husband's body. He says that he then came up behind her and strangled Lorraine Courier to death.
That's so messed up to take her down there to see him like that before he's about to kill her. That's
disgusting.
Sadistic. Yeah.
He said that he then doused their bodies in Drano, tossed them into a corner in the basement, and covered them with debris. And their bodies have never been found.
Oh my word.
Yeah.
Wow.
After the attack, he took their car to a nearby parking lot where he had previously parked his rental car, and he drove off. and investigators had never figured out what happened to the couriers. They pretty much had nothing to go off of because it seemed like the couriers just disappeared from their home and there was a broken window. But other than that, they discovered nothing at their home to lead them. And this house was abandoned. He doused them in Drano. So I'm sure that they started like decomposing. Thank you. I was like decompositing. Like, that's not the word.
No.
Decomposing.
Did they ever find their vehicle?
I'm not sure. I'm sure they did because it was parked in that parking lot. So I'm sure they found it and then just thought that, like, the couriers had abandoned it.
Oh, okay.
So investigators didn't discover what happened to the couriers until Israel Keyes confessed in 2012. So, like, had he not confessed to this, they would have never known.
And he never gave up where their bodies were.
Well, he said it was in that abandoned house. I'm not sure if he specifically described where in the house or where the house was, but this was over a year later. So, you know, or almost about a year later. So, you know, the house might have been destroyed. And if their bodies had decomposed really quickly, there might be nothing left behind. I don't know what Drano does to bodies, but.
I don't either.
I don't want to know. So.
I don't either.
But at least their family was able to get closure and, like, know that the person who did this suffered.
Right.
So, Keyes confessed to the murders of Samantha Koenig and Bill and Lorraine Currier. And he told investigators he took 4 or 5 more lives, but he never named those victims. By his own account, he killed 4 people in Washington State, which included a couple sometime between 2001 and 2005, one victim in 2005, and another in 2006. He also said that in 2009, he murdered someone on the East Coast, leaving the body in New York. And the FBI has actually said that they are, quote, relatively confident that this victim was Deborah Feldman. So Deborah Feldman was a 48-year-old woman living in New Jersey, and she went missing in April 2009. And her son, Matthew Feldman, was 24 years old when the FBI told him that they believed his mother was a victim of Israel Keyes. And he said that he actually believed his mother had been living in a witness protection program in Utah, and he's riddled with guilt because before his mother went missing, she struggled with addiction, and the last thing that Matthew said to her was, "If you're not going to get clean, you have no room in my life."
Oh, that's so sad.
I know.
I mean, unfortunately, that's a reality that families of addicts face.
Yeah.
So he shouldn't feel guilty for that necessarily, but the fact that he thought she was in,
I know,
witness protection, like, that's a tragedy, honestly. It really is.
I know. And now he just wishes that he knew what happened to his mother and why, and he, like, 99% will never know.
It makes me wonder if Keyes, like, didn't care to know who his victims were, or if he was just keeping that as, like, a little, I don't know, sick game.
I know. I could, like, see officials. It going either way. Like, I could see it going, like, he actually didn't, but also I feel like because of how methodical he was, I think he would have known.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking too.
Yeah,
he would want to know so he could, like, have that in his head.
Yeah. And Deborah was kind of the perfect victim for him because she was a drifter, and it's believed that she may have been working as a prostitute to make money. And it's known that Keyes frequented prostitutes, and the time that she disappeared matches with Keyes' account of when he killed a woman on the East Coast. So Matthew believes that his mother could have definitely fallen victim to Israel Keyes, and even more evidence led the FBI to believe that Deborah was Keyes' victim. According to the FBI, while talking with Keyes, they showed him photos of missing persons, attempting to identify victims that he wouldn't name. And he would, like, pretty much just respond, like, nope, 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 as they showed him photos. But with Deborah Feldman's image, when that was presented to him, he hesitated. And then he simply said, quote, "I don't want to talk about her yet." Ugh. Yeah.
What a, I have so many words. I just.
Yeah.
That makes me, that definitely confirms what I think then, that he was keeping it from them as a game.
Yeah. Yeah, so even though that wasn't an actual, like, confirmed account, after that, the FBI did announce that they did believe her to be the East Coast victim that he confessed to killing.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But other than that, none of his other victims have been known. There's a lot of speculation about who his other victims were, some potential victims, and his travel all around the country. So that's what we'll go into next. So Key's first homicide was sometime between July and October 2001 in Washington. The next was an unidentified couple sometime between 2001 and 2005, and Keyes has only hinted about these victims being buried in a location near a valley. Other than that, he hasn't said anything about them.
All right.
In either the summer or fall of 2005 and 2006, Keyes said he committed two unrelated murders, disposing of the bodies by boat. He said that at least one of the bodies was in Crescent Lake, Washington, and that he used anchors to sink the body. But again, the identities of these victims is also unknown, or are also unknown.
Mm-hmm.
On March 1st, 2007, Keyes drove to Nea Bay, or from Nea Bay, Washington, to Anchorage, Alaska, when he moved up there. He made stops, and I might say some of these wrong, but I'm going to do my best. On this trip, he made stops in Cache Creek, British Columbia, Waston Lake, Yukon, Destruction Bay, Yukon, and Teslin, Yukon. So there are no, like, direct crimes that have been linked during that travel period, but it's definitely still a possibility.
Right.
His next suspicious travel happened in October 2008. He traveled to North Dakota and Arizona. And then he flew to Seattle on October 31st, where he rented a car. He then, a few days later on November 2nd, flew from Seattle to Boston. Then on November 5th, he returned to Seattle and then back to Anchorage. So law enforcement does believe that during this travel he committed a crime. Just because of how random it was, that was his typical what he would do. As I mentioned, in April 2009, Keyes admitted to abducting a female from a state on the East Coast and then transporting the body across multiple state lines and burying the body in upstate New York, and that's who the FBI believes to be Deborah Feldman. On April 10th, 2009, Keyes robbed a community bank in Tupper Lake, New York, and there's actually a photo from that bank robbery I'll post on our Instagram. He said that after he robbed that bank, he went and parked near a campground out of the area, like waiting for things to calm down. And he said he waited multiple hours for emergency vehicles to pass and for it all to be clear. So again, very methodical.
Yeah.
Another suspicious travel sequence in which law enforcement thinks that Keyes committed a crime was in July 2010. So he flew from Anchorage to Sacramento, and then he traveled to Auburn, and he was there for 3 days, during which he rented a vehicle and drove about 280 miles.
Jeez.
Sometime between April and May 2011, Keyes was in Anchorage, and he attended to shoot a couple that was sitting in their car in a parking lot. But then a police officer pulled into the parking lot, and he temporarily thought about shooting the officer also, but then another officer pulled in, so he left.
Wow.
Yeah.
He's got some balls.
Oh, yeah. Sometime in later 2011, Keyes claimed that he had staked out the North Fork Trailhead in Eagle River, Alaska, with the intention of abducting someone, and he said that he had even prepared one of his murder kits and stashed it up the road, but he said he never ended up taking a victim from that location.
Hmm.
In June 2011, Keyes killed Bill and Lorraine Currier, who I discussed earlier, and then the next known victim was Samantha Koenig in February 2012 in Anchorage, and as you know, that's what led him to be caught.
That's when his reign of terror finally came to an end.
Yup. Okay, so a couple other like speculations, big speculations of people or victims that people believe Keys could have been involved in their deaths and or disappearances.
Okay.
First is a girl named Julie Harris, who disappeared in Colville in 1996. So this was before we know that, like, any of his murders happened, but that doesn't mean it's before he committed any, for sure. Like, we don't know.
Right.
A month after she vanished, her prosthetic feet were found. And then a year later, her remains were found. And her murderer has never been found. And it is known that Keys was in that area when she went missing. So some people believe that he could be responsible, but he did deny any involvement.
Okay.
Another speculation includes his potential involvement in the murder of 56-year-old Mary Cooper and her 27-year-old daughter, Susanna Stodden. They were shot while hiking in Washington State in 2006. So on July 11, 2006, the two were found shot to death on the Pinnacle Lake Trail in Snohomish County, which is a remote area of Washington. No suspect has ever been named in their death, and David Stodden, Mary's wife and Susanna's father, is still determined to find answers. So investigators did think that this could potentially be the couple that Keys claimed to kill in Washington. But in 2013, a Seattle Times article shared that the FBI had pretty much concluded that it was unlikely that Keys was involved in their attack. So it hasn't been definitively ruled out, but it's been ruled as, like, very unlikely.
Okay.
When that came out, David Stodden said that he was disappointed, but was still hopeful that there would be answers one day. All right, and then one big case that people speculate that could be linked to Keys is Lauren Spearer. So, if you haven't heard her case, we covered her in episodes 47 and 48, but I'll give you, like, a brief overview, but highly recommend you go listen to those episodes, because that's another crazy story.
Yeah.
So, Lauren was a student at Indiana University in 2011, and she had gone out with some friends drinking. She was with a couple of men, and she was out drinking, and surveillance footage caught her walking home from the bar, then leaving her apartment and going to her friend's condo, like, townhome. And then the friends claimed that she went from one house to another inside of this, like, complex, and then the last person to see her said that she was walking off back home around, I believe it was like 4 a.m and she was never seen again. She was never seen on surveillance footage after that, never seen on surveillance footage back at her apartment, nothing. So people speculate that potentially Keys could be the person who took her. Now, there's no real evidence linking this, and it's all speculative. Like, there's not even news articles about this. But I will say, when I read about it, I did find it a little bit intriguing. I don't think, like, knowing what I know about Lauren's case, I don't think that it would have been Keys. I think it would have been, like, the guys that were with her that night.
Yeah.
But I will say, when I read this, I was like, maybe. So,
was he in the area at that time?
So, he was okay. Known to be in the general area the day Lauren disappeared. So, this was before he killed Bill and Lorraine Currier. And if you remember, I said before that he flew into Chicago and then he drove to Vermont.
Right.
So, there's about like 12 to 14 hours that night, the night that Lauren disappeared, that he is unaccounted for. He apparently arrived in Chicago that morning, but never booked a hotel there, and he didn't drive up to his mother's house in Fort Wayne until the next day. And we know that he drove up to his mother's house the next morning in Fort Wayne because the rental car was on the Indiana toll roads that next morning. So it's like, he didn't stay in Chicago because he didn't book a hotel, so where was he in that time period?
Right.
Apparently, reportedly, the mileage on his rental car from that trip is also like the exact distance to drive around Bloomington and the surrounding forests and then drive back to Fort Wayne.
What are you doing?
What is that? What are you
doing? Where's my thing?
It's a granny grabber.
I love those things.
That's what I call it.
A granny grabber.
Yeah.
Why did he bring that in?
He had to get his vapor thingy.
Oh.
And I don't know. He just thought he was going to be funny.
Our husbands are so weird. Even though mine's not technically my husband yet, but almost.
Yeah.
So, basically, the rental car mileage was the amount, like, would allow for him to be able to drive down to Bloomington and, like, around Bloomington and then back to Fort Wayne.
Okay.
Yeah.
That is compelling.
Yes.
It is. But, like you said,
it's all speculative.
Know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One other thing, 5 days after Lauren disappeared was when Keyes killed Bill and Lorraine in Vermont. And he reportedly, when he was confronted about the Lauren Spearer case by the FBI, reportedly he had a similar reaction to when he was confronted about a case that he was confirmed to be involved in. So
interesting.
That's interesting, but that's also, if that's true, I find it very compelling. But we don't know for sure that that's true.
Okay.
But if it is, I find it compelling because, like, when they showed him the picture of Deborah Feldman, he reacted very differently than when they were showing him random photos.
Yeah, because he was just like, nope, 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 yeah. Nope, nope.
And then with Deborah, he was like, I don't want to talk about her. So I don't know. I do find that compelling. He was also described that during the murder of the couriers, he was more like amped up than usual. And people speculate that possibly killing Lauren just days before could explain this higher energy, and that's what led him to be a bit more sloppy leaving their bodies in the basement of the abandoned house, because he typically like disposed of bodies, either burying them or, like with Samantha Koenig, disposing of her body in the lake. Like, he typically did more, but with the couriers he just left them in the basement. So people say maybe he was like on edge if he had committed a murder a few days before.
Yeah.
Some people say there's also evidence that he was in Bloomington before the murder, so he could have planted one of his kill kits there. Again, we don't know. I mean, it's definitely a possibility because a college campus might be a place that he would want to go. I don't know. Maybe if he admired Bundy. Bundy was on college campuses. This is just me speculating, but yeah.
Yeah.
I really, like, knowing the details about Lauren's case, and again, you guys should go listen to that. It's episode 47 and 48. I don't think that it was Keyes, but, you know, I'm not 100% on that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a possibility.
Yeah. But like I said, no real proof, and the FBI and the police have never confirmed this to be true. Are you laughing that I said poof?
Yeah, sorry.
I can't talk.
It's okay.
Let me take a sip of water. Look at my fancy new cup that someone got me for my birthday.
Ooh, so cute.
Andrea got me a really cute Rainbow Disney cup for my birthday, and I'm obsessed with it. I've been using it for the past, like, 3 days. I should probably
watch it. I tried to find you something with just Donald, but, like, it's so obscure out there.
Yeah. No, I love it.
I was like, all right, well, this will work.
It's so cute. All right, so Keyes told investigators that when he was arrested, he had intended to next go to different areas of Alaska that had been ravaged by storms and work as a contractor searching for new victims. So that was kind of his next step.
That's messed up.
Yeah.
Those people are, like, out there suffering and you're, like, victims.
Mm-hmm.
Jeez, man.
And he also said that his dream was to one day build a house where he could imprison his victims.
Okay, H.H. Holmes.
Right?
Like, fuck.
I know.
That's...
I know.
Well, I'm glad that his plan didn't pan out.
Yeah. Yep. So during one of his court appearances, he attempted to flee. Like, he was in court and he attempted to, like, run off. And then the U.S. Marshals were able to quickly subdue him.
Well, thank God.
Yeah.
Jeez. Like, how did he even get away? Was he not shackled?
Apparently his handcuffs had been removed. I don't know why. And he was able to break the leg restraints and, like, tried to run off, but a marshal was able to, like, grab him. It's said that he either tried to leap over the bar that separated, like, the public from the defendant's table, or his momentum just carried him over. So it's not, like, exactly said, but he did try to flee, and they caught him pretty quickly.
Okay.
Now, the motive behind all of Israel Keyes' crimes was believed to just be enjoyment, like you were talking about earlier. He just seemed to enjoy it. He didn't even really have a, like, sexual motive behind it, because he did commit some sexual assault, but it didn't seem like, when he was talking about it, it didn't seem like that was all of his motive. He just enjoyed it.
Yeah. That was just, like, a quote-unquote added bonus for him, I guess. Mm-hmm.
So, as I mentioned earlier, I watched a portion of the interviews that have been released, and you can watch them for yourself on the FBI's YouTube channel, and I just want to share a couple of things that I noted in the portion that I watched.
Okay.
Keyes was very, like, upbeat, happy during his interviews, talking with investigators, you know, chatting with them. A portion that I watched, they were talking about, like, basically when they were interviewing him, they couldn't talk to him about Samantha Koenig's murder because that was, like, what he actually was charged with. He was never charged with any other crimes because they couldn't prove it. So there was, like, a lot of back and forth about, like, well, we can't talk about Samantha Koenig's murder because that's what you're, like, your lawyers have to be present for that since that's what's going to court, but we want to talk to you about other things. Right. And he was just, like, conversational, like, sitting back, drinking a coffee. They would go out of the room and he would, like, rest his head. Like, he was just chill.
Mm.
And I'll post a couple of screen grabs from some of those interviews on our Instagram so you can see. He was just, like, sitting there. One thing that he said was, he said he was upset that he created all this quote-unquote drama. He said, quote, "Honestly, I could have lived with the drama if I had been successful in escaping. But since I didn't, I'm like, man, I really wish I hadn't made all this drama." And then he, like, laughed.
So, he wishes he hadn't, gosh, my voice, hadn't, like, killed people?
Or no, he wishes he hadn't gotten caught. What?
Yeah, okay.
Well, he wishes he hadn't gotten caught, but since he did get caught, he wishes he hadn't killed people, but not because he feels bad for killing them, but because he doesn't like the drama.
The drama. That's a terrible descriptive word.
Mm-hmm.
Israel.
Mm-hmm. And that's, like, why it's so damn scary, because if he hadn't been caught for Samantha's murder, he would have just kept going, and who knows when he would have gotten caught.
Yeah, he would have killed a lot of people, I think.
Yeah. I think so, too. He's so fucking scary.
Yeah.
Okay. So, as I said, he was charged with Samantha Koenig's murder and was awaiting trial. He was being held in jail in Anchorage. And on December 1st, 2012, while being held in jail, Israel Keyes took his own life.
This makes me so freaking mad.
I know. I don't know what makes me more mad, him or Ariel Castro doing this, because with Ariel Castro, it was like, okay, you can't freaking take the punishment that you gave.
Yeah.
But with Israel Keyes, it's like so much of his crimes and his victims are unknown that it's like, you fucking coward.
Yeah. They're both cowards, I think. Yeah. And I think it's, you know, for different reasons. I think it's both really fucked up that they took their own lives. But this is typical of these kind of people.
Yeah.
Like, they can, you know, dish it out, for lack of better terminology, but they can't take it.
Right. Well, and the fact that they literally spoke to him for 40 hours of interviews and didn't get very much out of him just shows how much he must have been, like, he was totally controlling those interviews. Like, he was totally, like, being the one that was,
oh yeah,
I'm only going to tell you as much as I want. And yeah. So who knows? They might have not gotten anything else. Like, they might have never gotten anything else, no matter how much they talked to him. And he was probably enjoying being in those interviews.
I'm sure he was. How did he kill himself?
So he had apparently been given a razor blade, which I'm assuming for, like, shaving.
Yeah.
And he slit his wrists with the blade. And then he allegedly strangled himself with a bed sheet while laying in bed.
Yikes.
And he actually wasn't discovered until the next day, because he wasn't on suicide watch or anything, clearly. And yeah. He was found under, or what was found under his body was a letter. And it seemed to, like, just be rambling and didn't really give up anything. No clues as to the identities of the unnamed victims. And it was later called a creepy ode to murder. It reportedly described his victims as pretty captive butterflies.
That is sick.
Yeah.
So it was just like it really was just like a game.
Oh yeah.
Everything was just a game to him.
Yeah. 100%. He does kind of remind me of BTK, because I feel like BTK kind of did that once he was caught. I mean, he gave away more information, but I feel like he was like, oh, you want to study me? You want to, like, talk with me? And I feel like Keys was doing the same thing.
I'm, like, a genius.
Yeah, like, yeah. You want something out of me, and I'm not going to give it to you because I'm a jerk.
I want to be in control, yeah.
Exactly. On December 10th, 2012, Israel Keys' mother and four of his sisters attended a small funeral service for him. The pastor, Jake Gardner, opened the service by saying, quote, he is not in a better place. He's in a place of eternal torment. And I think that is a very fitting way to wrap up the story of Israel Keys.
Yep. And that he is.
So I wanted to just, like, close out with my overall thoughts and why I find Israel Keys as one of the most terrifying but, like, fascinating serial killers. And we've kind of mentioned this, but it is just so fucking crazy to me how he could have no MO. Like, usually serial killers have to have this MO because it's something that's driving them, but with Keys,
right?
I mean, I'm sure most serial killers enjoy killing, but with Keys it was literally like he didn't care what he was doing, he just wanted to kill.
I also feel like a lot of serial killers, it is fueled by, like, sex.
Yeah.
In some way, shape, or form. Like, some kind of turn on or, you know, whatever gross thing they find intriguing about their victims. But, like, he killed, you know, well, the man, at least one man that we know of. And maybe that was just random because the woman was there. Or,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
His, what's the word I'm looking for?
I don't know.
Like, his main focus was the woman, and the man just happened to be there.
But he picked out his victims. He could have found a woman to kill if, like, he wanted a single woman. So...
Exactly.
Yeah, I really don't think that it was motivated by that at all. I think he was just wanted to kill and found whoever was most convenient and he knew he could get away with without being caught. And he disposed of them differently. There were different methods of how he killed them and none of them were related. And like I said, some of them, like he said, he told investigators, some of them you don't even know they're dead. Like they're just missing people.
And the fact he had, like, different things, like, random killing objects in his kill kits.
Yeah.
Like, the whole thing was all different.
Yeah. It wasn't even like, oh, I'm gonna put the exact same things in every one.
Yeah.
No, it's so fucking creepy.
Yeah.
But I'm really glad that I got through that. I'm glad that I finally covered him, and now I don't want to think about him anymore because...
I know.
He freaking creeps me out so much. Oh, do you have any closing thoughts, Andrea?
I mean, it sucks that he killed himself, but at least he's, you know, not here anymore to torment even Because just knowing someone's just sitting in jail, I mean, that can be nerve-wracking for people, I feel like.
Yeah, well, and, like, I feel like when he was talking to investigators and stuff, he was enjoying that. Like, he was mm-hmm. he was having a good time. And, I mean, I know eventually they would have stopped talking to him, but he probably loved that and didn't feel like he was in jail. So even when he was in jail, he was, like, still having fun and getting to mess with people. So yeah. It grosses me out that he got to do that, and I'm glad that he didn't get to do that anymore.
Yeah, he probably got off on, like, being, like, infamous or,
oh yeah,
you know, I'm the sure. fame of it all. Yeah. I'm sure he did.
Yeah. But, you know, of course my heart goes out, our hearts go out to all of the victims, the ones that are known and the unknown ones. I just can't imagine not knowing. Like,
no, that's the worst part.
Yeah, but I will definitely post photos on our Instagram. I want to post, of course, Bill and Lorraine Currier's photos, but I also want to post some of the photos of, like, the maps that show where he traveled to. And, you know, everybody travels, but it's just crazy how much of this travel he did and how random it was. Like, you can tell yeah. that he definitely was doing that
just to kill.
Yeah, to kill, to plant murder kits, to scout, what's the word I'm looking for? Scope things out. Like, he was really fucking creepy.
Yeah.
But thank you guys so, so much for listening. I definitely want to cover more serial killers because I want to get their victims' names out there. But I think I need a little break before covering another serial killer because my, oh my, that was a lot.
Yeah. Well, my case next week will be, I mean, it's not a lighter case because none of them are, like, lighter, but it will be a more, like, I don't know, less intense. Okay. I don't know the right okay. way to even say it. So
I like that.
You guys will have, like, a small break between, like, the...
That's good. That's going to be very necessary. Also, be sure, if you guys haven't left a rating and review, be sure to do that. You can leave ratings on both Apple and Spotify, and we would absolutely love for you to let us know how you're liking the podcast, and keep sending in those case suggestions and listener stories. We've been getting a ton, and we love getting those, so you can submit those through our website, inhumanpodcast.com, and... Yeah. Thank you guys so, so much for listening. We will see you next week with a somewhat lighter case on Monday. Mm-hmm. And until then, keep it human.
Bye.